Okay, so this morning I get the pleasure of going through chapter 2 of the book, the Sabbath book. For those that have been reading, it is the book talking about, going more in detail into that passage in Isaiah. But before we do that, let's kind of do a recap. So in the first session, Josiah talked about the general importance of the Sabbath. So it was a creation ordinance like two other ordinances. And what were those? Anybody? And Josiah, you can't answer. It's not fair. Mr. Whitaker.
Marriage and labor.
Marriage and labor. That is right. So it was a creation ordinance, just like those two. We are to keep the Sabbath because God marked it holy from the very beginning. It was a creation ordinance. It wasn't just because he set it at Sinai. It was there at the beginning. But it was also a sign of the covenant of grace at Sinai. So we have the fact that God set it in place at the beginning, and then we also have the fact that God set it in place as on Sinai, and because of him being our Redeemer and that he commanded it. So two major reasons that Josiah kind of covered that first session. And then Pastor James, the next week, talked about the change from the Saturday to the Sunday, the Lord's Day. And he pulled a lot of things from the New Testament. And I think one of the most compelling arguments was this idea that for Adam and Eve, well, that Saturday actually would have been their first day, right? The seventh day for them would have been their first full day. I thought that was very compelling. Oscar, if you remember, he spoke on the importance of it as God's day of worship. So it was designed in the garden right off the bat to be this this time of worship and communion with God, specifically and especially. God sanctified it. He made it holy, which means that there's something special, something different about it, right? Something that has to be done differently. It's holy. Holy things were used for the worship of God. Also, the placement in the Ten Commandments shows it as being how we relate to God in worship. And of course, he also covered some of the general duties of Sabbath keeping. And then last week, if you'll remember, it was last week, wasn't it? Russ. Russ covered kind of the presuppositions of the passage we're going to be dealing with today, and that's the presuppositions of Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. And so, who remembers what the presupposition? Elijah, did I just see you raise your hand? Oh. Enoch.
It's something that you assume before.
Yeah, some assumptions we have beforehand. It's what we believe that kind of colors how we interpret any kind of data or information. So even if it's the Bible, if it's, you know, spreadsheets you get from somebody, if it's these charts and graphs and polls that you see in the news, presuppositions color how we interpret that kind of stuff. And so the presupposition of this particular passage that Russ pointed out is that the Israelites would have already been reading this passage as if it was a day devoted to worshiping God. That was their presupposition, and it really should be ours as well, right? And so that presupposition that God set a special day aside dedicated to the worship of him. All right, so for us this morning, we're going to cover a little bit more in detail, Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. There's going to be a lot of scripture we're going to cover. I'll be asking for volunteers, right? But we're going to be talking specifically about the prohibitions that are outlined from this passage, that we can pull from this passage. We're going to cover the requirements of the passage, again, that are pulled from the passage. We're going to cover at least one major objection that we're going to tackle from R.C. Sproul. And then we're going to really tackle and look in and dig on to the significant promises that are promised within this passage, and they're beautiful. So first of all, I need a volunteer to read Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. Luke. Out loud for everybody.
If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord is honorable, and shall honor him not doing your own will, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father.
Excellent. Thank you. So right off the bat, at the beginning of this, as we read this passage and look at it, this is a hallowed day. And he says that here, God says that through Isaiah here, that it's that they're to turn their feet from this day. And there's, that means there's something different about the Sabbath. And what did God say about the Sabbath? It's sanctified. It's set apart. It's holy. It's consecrated. What are some other things that God has sanctified? And this is, I'll just shout them out. You don't have to raise your hand. Just shout it out. Yes. I like that one. Marriage. Yep. So we have to treat it differently than any other kind of normal relationship, right? Well, the children of believers, we should be treating them differently than, you know, the children of pagans, right? The tools for worship in the Old Testament were sanctified. They weren't to be used for ordinary purposes. Our bodies, right? We have to use them as living sacrifices. There's something, we should treat our bodies differently as believers, right? Because God has said they're holy, right? The ground and the burning bush. A very obvious example of some place that God said was holy, something that He said was holy. And it's specifically what Isaiah is referencing here of turning the feet. What did God tell Moses in that passage when he came into the presence of God at the burning bush? Take your shoes off for why? It's holy ground. He wasn't to trample on that special place where God had come to meet with him. And God comes to meet with us every Sunday, every Lord's Day. And He's saying that here in this passage, don't trample on this. This is special. This is sacred. You need to take this seriously because I'm here with you in your midst, and you're here to worship me. Right? So trampling in this case is not doing, and we're going to cover all each of these, not doing your own way, not doing your own pleasure, not speaking your own words, as Luke mentions and called out in that passage. So those are the themes of the prohibitions we're about to go into. Any questions so far? Dave.
Some pastors might even say only once a year because we don't do it on Peter. Right? Yeah.
I mean, what I'm getting at is from what you said in the introduction and how we cut out that.
Well, I think you said that at the beginning as a rhetorical question, so I'll leave that to y'all to chew on. But Josiah, I think, has got a comment on that.
I was going to say, since God defined the day and made it holy, very consistent with Isaiah 58. What matters whether we think we do the Lord's Supper on a weekly basis or not is part of the day. Depends on the question of whether that's what is commanded or that is what is not commanded. So my point is, you look to the Word of God to define how He wants to treat His day, and that's how you do it.
I think it's fair to say if we have evidence in the New Testament where the apostles and the disciples would partake of the Lord's Supper on the Lord's Day, that there's probably a model of us doing that regularly on the Lord's Day as often as possible. I'm the kind of guy who'd say, why don't we do it all the time? Why don't we do it every Lord's Day? I think that would be amazing. All right. Prohibition. So the first one in that passage was not doing thine own ways. So it's not just not doing what's sinful. Actually, some people believe, well, God's telling you, don't sin. Well, first of all, the problem with that is we're not really supposed to be sinning any time, right? That should be expected every day, right? But that's not what's tied up here in this idea of doing your own thing, your own ways, doing thy own ways. It's more about this idea of the ordinary course of your life throughout the week, right? We go to work, some of us 5 days a week, some of us 6 days a week, and we have things that we do that we have to do throughout the week, and the things that we enjoy doing throughout the week, and the books that we read, and the TV shows that we watch, and the discussions that we have, and all of the deliverables and actions and homework and everything that we have to do is tied up throughout the week, your own way. the things that you would normally do. That's kind of what's being talked about here. Matthew Henry says that regarding the Sabbath, we should, in all we say and do, we must put a difference between this day and all other days. Right? There is something different about it. And so it can't just be about sin, because honestly, we're called to be holy, and that's a calling for all 7 days of the week. Right? And so it must be more than that. So do we need more proof? Let's take a look. Somebody pull up Isaiah 56 and then read 2 through 6. Wait. Oh, yeah, Enoch. Wait, you've already done something, right? You volunteered. But, okay, Enoch, go for it. 56, 2 through 6. Isaiah 56, 2 through 6. Thank you, sir. So here in Isaiah 56, 2 through 6, what do we see here as more evidence of there's something different that we need to be doing differently? It's not our own way. We see that there are blessings specifically for holding it fast, keeping it, not profaning it, keeping hands from doing work. Even further, it says again, keeping it. It says again, choosing the things that please the Lord. I thought that was probably one of those powerful portions in that passage, to emphasize what Isaiah was saying two chapters later, that this is not your own way. This is the way that pleases the Lord that we should be doing on the Lord's Day. It's all about joining to the Lord to minister to Him, right? To worship Him. So the next one we have is not finding thine own pleasure. So this idea of doing as you please, it kind of is very similar in ways to the first prohibition, right? Not doing thine own way, not finding thine own pleasure. It's actually reinforced and mentioned twice in chapter verse 13. It's kind of a summary of the prohibition. But the thing I want you to look at, when you look at these, at the three prohibitions of thine own way, thine own pleasure, thine own speech, right? Speaking, thine own words. What do you hear? Thine, right? Don't do your pleasure. Don't do your word. Speak your words. Don't do your ways, right? Instead, it's God's. That's what we should pull from that. That's the implication when God says, don't do yours. He's saying, do mine. Might I also make an aside here that this is also an indirect commentary about the right worship on the Lord's Day, right? As well. So not just invented worship and whatever sounds good to us and our ways. The indirect implication here is that there is a right way that pleases God in how we worship Him on the Lord's Day in the called service. So this covers from the Puritan view, and I would dare say from the Westminster Confession of Faith, that this includes even recreation, right? Again, when we go back to the idea of your ways, and then of course we have here your own pleasures, there's a fully orbed way of life here on the Lord's Day. It's the most widely, however, rejected belief, I would say, in regards to the Lord's Day, outside of just completely not doing anything at all, and that is, well, why can't I actually go and ride bicycles, or why can't I go out and swim, and why can't I go out and do organized sports, right? It's lawful on any other days. Why not on the Sabbath? And that's an open question for somebody. Why is it okay for these things that are not sinful on any other day, fishing, hiking, biking, organized sports, right? Why would they be prohibited on the Lord's Day? Not holy, I like that. Yes, ma'am. Victoria. I like that one very much, yes. Josiah.
Because they're not commanded.
That's a very good one, too. It's not commanded. If we're talking about the regulative principle, God has commanded certain things for the Lord's Day, right? And so if it's silent on it, it's not an allowance to go and do those things. I would say one of the biggest reasons, and those are very good reasons, is that they may promote rest, right? People find hunting and fishing and biking and swimming and all these things restful physically often, but they actually don't promote the day as being a day set apart for the worship of God. They don't promote the worship of God. And I dare say organized sports are probably one of the biggest and most discouraging developments in evangelical Christianity today, right? This idea that, well, you know, we got soccer, and the only time soccer can have their meets or their practices is on Sundays. That is a horrible indictment on how far we've fallen from what was once considered a biblically sound view of the Sabbath, where we're like, okay, let's go kick a ball around in the field with a bunch of other kids, right? What does that tell our children when we say, you know what, we're not going to actually go and gather with believers on the Lord's Day. We're instead going to go put our cleats on and go run around the field for a while and kick a ball. What does that tell them? Dave.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of people rationalize in their mind the Lord's Day, I've gone to church. I have given God for 3 hours.
Check that box. And again, because we're not, I think we can all agree that we don't see anywhere in the commandment where it says the seventh day God made holy for 3 hours, right? He set apart the entire day, which is part of the disconnect. Yes, Dave.
Well, to follow that, I find it very interesting that I think most of us here would say that we are literal 7 days, 24 hours creation. So we read the other 6 days as 24 hours, and when we get to this day, we read it like that's 3 and a half.
It's symbolic. Oh, and it's completely in Christ. It's abrogated because our Sabbath is rested in Christ. Right. It's the only symbolic day of the seven, right, Dave?
Right.
All right. So that covers thine own ways, thine own pleasures. I did want to kind of do some kind of get your brain thinking. So the questions that we should ask ourselves or shouldn't ask ourselves when we're talking about the Sabbath and how we can keep it in a way that's honoring to God and not in a legalistic way, right, is instead of asking, what's wrong with doing this, we really should say, how does this particular activity promote the purpose of the Sabbath? And I think that's a more positive way to ask the question, right? When we get stuck in the idea of what we can't do and what we can't do, which there are things we can't do, I think it takes the focus off of God to back to us, right? Well, I can't do that. I can't do that. Well, let's talk about what you can do, especially as it relates to how we promote the worship of God on the Sabbath, the purpose of the Sabbath. So the off, yes, sir. Oh,
isn't that the conflict that there was between Jesus and the scribes and the Pharisees? That the scribes and the Pharisees looked at what he was doing, that they do it during this work on the Lord's Day, and Jesus was actually saying, this is promoting God's kingdom.
As Jesus was off to do with the commandments, he pointed out that there's more than just the words on the page. There's the intent and the heart behind them, right? I'm going to get ahead of myself, but it's more than just murdering, right? It's the anger and the hate that you have in your heart. It's more than just adultery. It's the thoughts and the lust that you have. All right, so the author here says that all that genuinely promotes the worship of God on the Sabbath promotes the purpose of the day. And so what I pointed out before, and I'd like to point out again, I think I pointed out to some of the kids, is there are times, Celeste, I keep using you as the example, for those that haven't seen, you know, Celeste will sketch during Pastor James' message. And some people some people may find that, you know, troublesome. But Celeste literally cannot engage with Pastor James' message if her hands aren't doing something. And so writing and sketching as she listens allows her to actually fully engage with James. And she can answer the questions, she can consume what he's preaching, and all that. Whereas if she didn't, her mind is over there at the squirrel outside or the fly that's flying around, right? And I know that she's not alone. And so what the author is saying here, and I think the intent here, is that there are things that may that we can use that help promote the day, which is the day of worship, right? If there's something that's causing us distraction, it should be upon us to remove that distraction, right? Or if there's something that's a distraction, it should be upon us to try and find ways to mitigate that distraction. Because, again, we're trying to promote the worship of God. All right. I do have a question for James. Because I've been chewing on this for a while. And this kind of might go with some of the stuff that Dave has mentioned. And that's for any elder, not just James, by the way. Any of our elders. What about folks who find bicycling helps them to have an uninterrupted time to listen to the Bible, theology, audiobooks, or other such things that promote the worship of God? So they say, hey, I really can't seem to find time to be unhindered in my listening and reading of the Word. And if I'm on that bicycle on the Lord's Day after the service, and I'm riding my bicycle, I can plug my earpods in, I can listen to the Bible, and I'm really actually able to devour it easier. What would you say? And I have no answer for that, but I'm just curious if some yours and maybe the other elders' thoughts on that one.
So I would say that the Lord defined things in Leviticus 23, the Sabbath as a holy assembly, and that there's a priority on the public exercises of worship over against the private. If the point of the activity is the worship, that's fine. I would just caution against, especially since we're a one service a day church, although if you participate well, you can be here from 10 to 4:30. I would caution against those of us who are not in households where we can continue keeping the day in kind of a corporate way together as a household, from turning the Isaiah 56 eunuch back into a eunuch too early. Because one of the blessings of God to his people on the Sabbath is that on the Sabbath, none of them are eunuchs. None of them are, you know, singles or widows or any of the other providential circumstances that can isolate us. But that the worship of that day is especially corporate and public worship. I mean, if it's something that enables you, most adults have more self-control. Some children cannot sustain corporate worship all day, and so in order to do well in those particular times, because hopefully we're all agreed that the corporate worship is for them as well as for as much as for anybody else. So there are wisdom things, kind of like having worship in a building at a certain temperature for a certain length of time. Especially aim at public worship and then work from there. So again, not the list of what you can't do, but if I'm aiming at corporate worship as much as possible on this day, is this something that comes from that aim?
Okay. Thank you, James. All right, I'm behind schedule, so we're going to scoot a little faster. The next prohibition is the not speaking your own words. So this is actually really difficult. And I think we can all agree that trying to control our tongue and our speech and the ways that the things that we say is probably one of the most difficult aspects of the Christian life. James, in chapter 3, makes that very clear, that taming the tongue is really hard. And while he's specifically talking about the cursing and all of that, there's application there to our everyday, to our life in the Sabbath, on the Sabbath, on the Lord's Day, that it's really difficult to take this idea of speaking God's words and speaking words that are of worship of Him and edifying to the saints. You know, more than just hey Jordan, how you doing and how's work going and current events and any other thing. We want to talk about that stuff, and honestly, oftentimes this is just about the only time we get to talk together. On any given week is the Lord's Day, and so we want to know how people are doing. But we have to ask ourselves, is that promoting the worship of God? And I'll leave that open for you all to chew on. The thing is that we want to make sure that we aren't using our own words. We weren't speaking our own words. Matthew 15, 19 and 20. Who wants to pull that real fast? 15, 19 and 20. And while you're turning there, I'm going to keep going. That's Nathan, Matthew 15, 19, and 20. So what would the unbeliever think, right, as he's turning there? We tell them that God, that Christ is supreme. We tell them that worship is this great thing. We tell them that there's the good news of Christ dying in our place, in the place of sinners, and that all who believe can be made right before Him, right? All these beautiful things. And then our speech, when they come actually on the Lord's Day, is all about the current events and the worldly things. What does that tell the unbeliever who comes and visits, right? If we really believe who God is, who He says He is, and that He's done special and mighty work in our lives daily, and especially on the Lord's Day, even our speech should be different. That's what Isaiah is saying here. Did you find it, Nathan?
Yes, sir.
Go for it.
Again, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them.
Yeah, thank you. So that's God promising to be in the midst of the believers on the Lord's Day, saying that if you agree in my name, it'll be granted. And that's not agreeing for the lottery, right? That's there's implications in, that are there that say this is agreeing and speaking things that are God's words, right? That are in alignment with His will. All right. So requirements, and I love this portion. Call the Sabbath of the light. What we don't see here, and I can't remember which of the previous teachers mentioned this. It's not a drudgery, right? This idea of delighting on the Lord's Day is not some kind of heavy burden. What does Jesus say in Matthew 11:30? He says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Right? We shouldn't think of this as some massive burden on the Lord's Day to keep it in a way that honors Him. This is something that is a joy and is light and is glorious. Just like in the repetitions in Psalm 119, the things where it says, your testimonies are my delight. I delight in your statutes. I make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. I long for your precepts. I delight in your commandments, which I love. Right? And one of the commandments, of course, is the Lord's Day keeping. Right? I love that. I delight in that. Help me to walk in that. That's what the psalmist is saying here. It's a delight, and it's a glorious thing. He's not like, oh, Lord, please help me to keep the Sabbath. No, he's like, I delight in it. I delight in even that commandment. I delight in that commandment. And the thing I want you to take away, there is a physical and mental benefit to keeping the Lord's Day, but that is not the focus by any stretch of the imagination. It's a delight because of it's a rest from work to worship and meditate on God. If we get focused on the benefits it brings us, again, we're looking the wrong direction because it's about Him and His worship. So again, calling it a delight, making a positive statement about it, can remove that idea of a legalistic, you can't do, you can't do. What's a delight? We want to make it a delight. It's delightful. Some significant objections, actually one in particular. R.C. Sproul basically said, you know, I kind of feel that the Puritans erroneously interpreted the passages forbidding all recreation and not just business. So Sproul's view is that this idea of pleasure, of not doing your own pleasure, was actually about business transactions, because people would be wanting to, their pleasure would be doing business in commerce, right? And honestly, I don't believe that really fits in the context of what's going on here. First of all, it'd be a modification of the commandment, which is not what the prophets did. Our confession of faith says that there are some necessary inferences that we get from Scripture. These things that may not be black and white, here it is, but we have to deduce them by necessary consequence, right? We see it in marriage, that it was always monogamous and not polygamous. We see that at the very beginning. That was very clear, right? God hates divorce. We can all agree on that. When did He say that first, though? Malachi. Does that mean it wasn't the case before Malachi? Or we have some necessary inferences from the very beginning in the garden where He said, the two become one flesh, that God really hates divorce. Right? There's necessary inferences we have to pull from that. Let's see. So that's the big thing. The other part I want to harp on there, just for a little bit, because again, I don't have a lot of time, is that even if doing your own pleasures was all about commerce and making money, you still have to tackle the first one, which is not doing your own ways, right? And you can still, pleasure and recreation and all that can still be summed up in doing your own ways, right? So I love Sproul. He's had some of the most impactful books in my life, but I don't think he's wrong here. Again, the idea of the Ten Commandments, as Jesus made clear in the Gospels, is that there's more to it than just the black and white words on the page, right? You know, the idea that there's principles that are implied by the commandments. All right, the significant promises in the very short amount of time we have left. Then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord. It's the greatest, one of the greatest and most often missed blessings of the Lord is this idea of delighting on the Lord's day and finding a delight in the Lord. So, children, what's the chief end of man? To enjoy him forever. There's one more word missing. To John. I think it's to fully enjoy him forever, right? Oh, it's the large, that's why. That's why I like the large one that way. To fully enjoy him forever, right? That's why. You guys are right. Excellent job. Apparently, I was thinking of the larger. To fully enjoy him forever. Sabbath day keeping is this a foretaste of this fully enjoying him forever, right? As James has been often said about how this is a foretaste of what we'll experience in glory with God, right? It's a foretaste of fully enjoying him forever. That's beautiful. And that's a missed blessing on our parts when we don't actually observe it in a way that's honoring to God. I will cause thee to ride on the high places of the earth. Don't have time to read the passages. So if you're writing it down, there's Deuteronomy 32, there's Deuteronomy 33, and then there's Habakkuk chapter 3 that you can go and look into. These all show some sort of victory of adversity. But even more so, and especially with a passage in Habakkuk, more spiritual type of victory. This idea that God promises your faith to flourish and your soul to prosper when delighting in that day. What a glorious promise. And we see that through the keeping of the Lord's Day, through the means of grace. We're about to partake of the Lord's Supper shortly. And how, you know, that there's something real that happens there, and we are built up and edified and all of the glorious stuff. I'll cause thee to ride on the high places of the earth, to have this great faith, to build your faith up. And feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father. So we've been hearing a lot about Jacob the past many number of Lord's days, right? And if there's one thing we've learned through the promises of the Lord to Jacob and Abraham and Isaac, that Jacob and his descendants and his predecessors are building up a physical wealth and prosperity due to the covenant God made with him and Isaac and Abraham. But there's a spiritual reality to that, right? We're not physical descendants of Abraham. Most of us probably aren't. There might be some, right? But we are, if we are believers by faith, we are spiritual descendants of Abraham, as it says in Galatians. And so we become these adopted children with those promises that God has made, these spiritual promises. Dr. Piper says, our inheritance includes the benefits of salvation in adoption, assurance of salvation, boldness in prayer, and confidence, right? These are promises that we have through our heritage of Jacob, thy father, right? The spiritual heritage. We have these blessings, these benefits. All right. Before we close, I'll open the floor for we don't really have time for questions. Do we have any, like, really pressing questions? Like one that's just burning in your mind. Oscar.
Not a question. I'm sorry. I think it's kind of peppered throughout all of our discussions, myself and society and us, that we need to delight.
Yeah. All right, so to sum up this morning, we should, as Oscar said, we should be delighting in the Lord's Day and should really be concerned when we're not. If we don't find a delight in the Lord's Day, it should cause us to examine ourselves spiritually and see what's going on, right? We have become a society that's become antagonistic to even the idea of keeping the Lord's Day. Ultimately, Isaiah 58:13 and 14 is about Him, not us. He's the purpose and he's the focus. You have to be a Christian to truly delight in the Sabbath, right? Non-Christians, we can't expect them to delight in the Lord's Day. They can struggle through it and put on a pretty face, right? But really, the heart won't be there, right? And again, it's that becomes me-focused because it's about me trying to keep it. And then if we truly desire to have revivals in our churches that I think all of us want, even in our lands and our country, it has to start with a renewed focus on delighting in the Lord's Day, I would dare say. So for next week, I don't know who's teaching, Lord willing, will be a discussion about the worldliness, the causes and effects of worldliness in the church. Spoiler alert, learning to delight in to truly delight in the Lord's Day is a means to combat worldliness, just FYI. And also, it's probably one of the main reasons that the church is as worldly as it is today, right? Because of the dereliction of keeping that commandment. Yes, Dave?
The one thing I was going to say is Oscar mentioned too, about it. If we were going to please our faith followers by doing something for them, we wouldn't do it by going, I'm going to do this. This is going to make them really happy. You know, but we would. The only way we could do it is if we had happiness. I know this is going to please them. So, if God says we're delighting Him, the only way we can delight in Him is if we can respond.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Dave. Actually, it makes me think of a phrase I heard at a previous church we were at, where the pastor said, obedience is doing what you're told, when you're told to do it, with a happy heart, right? And I think that's the key that we are missing, that we often miss here, is that we should be doing this with a happy heart, and we should delight in it, right? It is time, so who would like to close us in prayer this morning?